I'm Davina Zimmer, and today on The Detail, what is a GPS and why are people mad about the one that deals with transport?
The government has unveiled a $20 billion transport plan which will see the Roads of National Significance project revamped with 15 new four-lane highways to be built.
Climate change is no longer a strategic priority under the government's new draft policy statement on land transport.
The Transport Minister has also signalled today that public transport fares could be about to increase.
The government is defending its move to hike vehicle registration costs by $50. The policy wasn't signalled during the election campaign, and Labor says it's dishonest, claiming Nationals' numbers don't add up, and motorists will now pay the price.
The government is also shifting the focus of the Land Transport Fund. It will no longer pay for walking and cycling projects. In fact, those projects are facing a funding slash.
So a GPS in this instance has nothing to do with global positioning systems. It's a government policy statement.
You should care about government policy statements as much as you care about the budget, because actually this is how the things that you voted for and the things that you like or don't like about the government, this is how you get them.
What we're getting is roads, roads and roads. $20 billion worth over the next 3 years.
Investing in these corridors will make it easier for Kiwis to get to work where they need to go and create a more productive and resilient transport network.
As long as those Kiwis are using motorways to get where they need to go. Because in congested cities such as Auckland, the irony is that the spending priorities will do the opposite, in some cases forcing traffic to a standstill during peak times.
The most pressing need in Auckland is to develop a really attractive public transport network.
There are significant cuts to spending on rail that's concerned a few people. You know, councils have raised some concerns about it.
Later in the podcast, I'm going to talk to the Herald's Simon Wilson about the knock-on effect these funding decisions will have on Auckland in particular. But first, we'll look at exactly what a GPS involves with the Herald's deputy political editor, Thomas Coughlin.
It's become more and more common recently to split up the various parts of the government into policy agencies and delivery agencies. It's quite an important split. So let's take transports. You have the Ministry of Transport, and then you've got Waka Kotahi NZTA, which is the New Zealand Transport Agency. Now, if I wanted to build a road and I was the Transport Minister, I couldn't just call up NZTA and say, build me that road. They are the delivery agency, they are in charge of building roads, but the government policy statement is the bit that sort of tells them what sort of roads to build and where, because they are the delivery agency. If I called up the Ministry of Transport and said, build me a road, I also couldn't do that because the Ministry of Transport, despite the name, doesn't build roads. The Ministry of Transport is the policy agency, so those are my officials in Wellington. And so the government policy statement is a way of getting those two parts of your portfolio to talk to each other. You've got your policy people who think about how you should do something, and then your delivery people who actually do it.
Mm. Is the budget policy statement, is that kind of like the mother of all government policy statements? Or is that another completely separate, am I gone completely left field here?
There's no piece of legislation which is like, this is what a government policy statement looks like.
Okay.
So they all look a wee bit different. And the budget policy statement comes out of the Public Finance Act. The budget policy statement is basically about signalling to the financial markets and signalling to New Zealanders, this is how big the budget's going to be. So the markets can prepare themselves to buy up all the debt that it's going to have to be raised to pay for everything. And you can sort of see the shape and priorities of the budget ahead of time, because it's generally seen to be a bad thing to just dump the budget on the markets. The markets get pretty jittery. You kind of want to lead people into it. So that's what the budget policy statement does.
Right. Okay. And so how many are there? You've mentioned the transport one.
I'm not actually sure how many there are. I think the main ones to talk about is that they're abbreviated to GPS. So the GPS government policy statement on land transport, that's the big one that most people will have dealt with. That's Ministry of Transport and the Minister, Simeon Brown at the moment, getting together and telling Waka Kotahi NZTA what to do. We've also got a GPS on housing and urban development. So that's the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development. It's a relatively new ministry set up by the last government. And Kāinga Ora, Homes and Communities, they're the delivery agency. They go out and build houses. So the Minister of Housing, Chris Bishop, will get together with his officials eventually and deliver one of these. They'll get together with his officials, say, I want my housing policy to look like this. And then Kāinga Ora will go and do it. The really big one, which is going to happen in the next few months before June 30, is the Health Government Policy Statement. This is going to blow the others out of the water. It's going to be absolutely huge. This is part of the health reforms that Labor did. So we've got a health system which spends about $27 billion a year. It's massive. The entire government budget's about $120 billion a year. So this is $27 billion of that. And so the Minister for Health, Shane Reti, he's going to get together with his health officials at the Ministry of Health. They are the policy agency. They're going to work out, you know, what the priorities are going to be in healthcare, you know, reduce wait times, more community health, rural health's a big one, and say, right, these are my policy priorities. Here's the $27 billion you get to spend every year. Go out and deliver me this health policy.
With government budgets done annually, government agencies essentially have no funding certainty beyond those 365 days. Obviously, ministers are unlikely to let them just run out of money, but a GPS gives further security because they're a long-term plan.
What these government policy statements do is that they look over a longer period of time. So again, in land transport, a government is required under the Land Transport Management Act to publish a government policy statement at least every 3 years. And they look out over 10 years. They have a 10-year horizon. So it gives the transport system a way of looking into the future and thinking, right, you know, this is the direction we're heading in. And in reality, these are done much more frequently as governments change because ministers can't keep their hands off the tools and they want to constantly be changing things and deliver the things that they want to do. So in reality, we actually get land transport GPSs every 3 years, basically. They're done every 3 years.
A 10-year plan that's often redone every 3 years. That doesn't quite add up.
David Parker delivered a draft GPS on transport before the election. The new government came in, ripped it up and started again and issued a new one. So, yeah, they changed with governments, which is important. People voted for a different direction and the new government is entitled to deliver that direction. So it's a way of balancing your democratic right to toss the old lot out and get a new lot in and change the policy. I guess there is a real benefit in a policy sense from having that long-term horizon. They all have slightly different horizons. I think the health one is for 3 years, so the health system gets 3 years to think about, you know, what it can do. And that's, I think it's really important to do that. There are some benefits to think, right, you know, we've got a workforce shortage, we have some mental health issues that are coming through that we need to address through the health system. So with that three-year horizon, I think, right, let's start recruiting experts and training people in those areas and going for it. You know, the old budget process was criticised because, you know, 12 months is a really short time frame when you're dealing with $27 billion.
Okay, so government policy statements, they basically give certainty to government agencies by setting out the vision for what that relevant sector will look like for the next foreseeable future. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's sort of part of what they're designed to do. Yeah. And it does, it also separates things out. There's a sort of a probity aspect, which is really important, I think, for things like transport. And that's really quite controversial. It's a big issue. But traditionally, you'd say, right, I want to spend this amount of money on roads and this amount of money on public transport. I think I want to address congestion in Auckland and public transport issues in Wellington, and you'd give officials a really high level view of what you wanted, and then Waka Kotahi would get together and say, well, right, well, these projects need to be greenlit, we'll stall these projects because they don't fit with your priorities in the GPS, we'll do this, and that's really how it should work. Recently, ministers have started putting in a GPS, we would like you to consider building this specific road and this specific public transport project. So you're really kind of overstepping your boundaries by saying, me, the minister, I campaigned on doing this road and I would like you to do it or else, basically.
Some cities, like Auckland and Wellington, get a large piece of the investment pie, leaving other towns maybe feeling a little left out. And while it hasn't become a problem in New Zealand yet, Thomas says it could create an issue called pork barrelling, where politicians funnel money into electorates they want to win despite having little or no economic value.
you know, your officials look at the benefit cost ratios of various projects, and some of these electorally advantageous projects have very low benefit cost ratios, and so you're ploughing literally billions of dollars into projects that really don't deliver much economic benefit but are politically advantageous. And so it sidelines officials who would actually say, well, look, maybe we look at doing some of these projects which have higher benefit cost ratios.
Over the last few years, there's been a growing trend to get people off roads and onto public transport. The latest draft policy statement is light on rail and bus priorities and heavy on roads, and that's led to concerns that all the previous work could be undone. And while the average commuter may not have much say, Coughlin expects local councils who have expressed these worries will be listened to.
The way it's done is that you release a draft, so the biggest person who gets a say is the minister and their officials, and then anyone can get a say in it. So if you don't think it's very good, then you have the ability to make a submission on it and tell them that you don't think so. And in the case of the transport one, it's consulted on just like other government policies, so it's a great democratic exercise of giving feedback on something.
And how much influence does that public feedback actually have on then the final statement?
Occasionally, things change. Often ministers have a pretty good idea of what they want.
So then just going back to when you say that anyone can have a say in it, they can have a say in it, but it doesn't really change much.
No, it doesn't always get listened to. But it's possible that, you know, if you're quite important, again, if you're the Mayor of Auckland and you have a view on the transport policy statement, then your view might be taken into account, particularly if you come armed with some reasoning, as the Mayor of Auckland has done, about what it would do to congestion in Auckland. So it might be possible that would change. You know, as is often the case in public policy, the more quote-unquote important you are, the greater influence your say has. You know, everyone has an equal say, but they're not equally listened to, I guess.
Auckland possibly feels like it's being targeted, but that's partly because it's over a third of the population and it is the economic centre of the country. And therefore, Auckland has to function well, and that means its transport has to function well for the country to function well.
Simon Wilson has been across the draft statement for land transport from the day it was released last month.
Nationwide, transport contributes 20% of carbon emissions, but in Auckland it contributes 40%. So it's a really big issue in this city. We have clogged up roads, we have those emissions, we have an unacceptably high road safety record. And an example that I think is relevant is that if you think about New York City has 3 million more people than New Zealand, and it has a third less of the road traffic deaths. And that ought to be an unacceptable statistic for New Zealand.
He says our country has a lethal combination of bad driver behaviour and unsafe roads. The last government was committed to improving the latter in its Road to Zero safety strategy, which included the installation of medium barriers on main highways. The plan struggled to meet its targets, though, and National has scrapped it, arguing it's better to put money into building roads of national significance.
But roads of national significance is possibly the most expensive way you could address the safety issue, where we've got this much more efficient medium barrier approach that could continue to be rolled out. It's an oddity, if you like, in the GPS, the new GPS. Words are there, we're going to do it in a value for money way, but in practice, there is no, it's not clear at all there's any intent to do it in the real value for money way.
I had a look at the statement and there's a lot of emphasis on roads, roading new roads, roads of national significance. What do you think that this says about government's attention to public transport and other options of moving around the city, like walking and cycling?
Right. So if we do look at Auckland for a moment, there is a commitment to a couple of very big public transport projects. They're going to finish the City Rail Link, which is the underground link that will make the trains that we have much more efficient, double their capacity. And that's great. They could hardly not do it. It's you know, the tunnels are all dug. The platforms are being laid at the moment. The work's 80% done. But there are 40-something level crossings around Auckland where the railway and the road cross over each other. And because we're going to have double the capacity of our train network, that effectively means double the number of trains and longer trains, many of those road crossings are going to become dangerous and will be stopping the traffic a lot of the time. There's one in Auckland where it's going to stop the traffic for 3/4 of every hour.
Wow.
Which clearly is going to infuriate drivers and therefore possibly encourage them to take risks they shouldn't take. That work should be addressed. Yeah, so that some of those crossings should close. Others have to be what's called grade separated, which means you basically put a bridge or an underpass across the rail line so that the cars and the trains don't get in each other's way. Obviously a sensible thing to do. It's not funded in the GPS, so there's an issue there. Now, there's also funding to finish the Eastern Busway, which is running from Panmure out to Botany. Again, that work is well down the line, so to speak, and so that obviously has to finish. And there is an intention to build a new busway or a new rapid transit line in the northwest, much needed, but there's almost nothing else for any other kinds of public transport. And if you think about the question of how do you get people to agree, I'm going to leave the car at home today, they've got to know that their local bus is going to turn up. It's not going to be too expensive to use. It's going to be pretty frequent. It's going to be reliable, all of those things. And if there isn't the funding in those areas, then we could see the local transport networks in Auckland really suffer.
When Transport Minister Simeon Brown released his draft policy statement, he said it will unlock infrastructure investments that are needed to help Aucklanders get where they need to go, quickly and safely. Simon disagrees.
He's talking in particular about, yes, those big public transport projects, City Rail Link and the Eastern Busway, and they will make a significant difference, no question. But they were in place already. They're not invented by this new government. He's also talking about the roads of national significance. Now, there are three in Auckland. One is called the East-West Link, which is a four-lane highway that will join the two motorways that lead south out of Auckland. That project was proposed under the previous National-led government of John Key. It went to the Environment Court. It's been extraordinarily debated at length. It has never had a good business case. And when it was going to be built, it was going to be the most expensive road per kilometre in the world, except for the new highway that Russia built for the Winter Olympics in Sochi. And that was then, you know, that was 2016-17. Mm. Obviously a lot more expensive now. So there is no economic case for the East-West Link. It is a favourite among some trucking companies, and that's really all you can say about it. The second one is we've already had the Puhoi to Warkworth motorway extension. The next one will be Warkworth to Wellsford. That, again, is an expensive piece of highway, which will push the bottleneck a bit further north and will help people who are driving a lot in that area, but also does nothing to encourage any alternatives. And if you think about it in terms of freight, because there's a big argument that freight efficiently ought to get between Northland and Auckland, then the railway is the facility that needs the most work rather than the roads, in my view. Mm-hmm. And the third one is a road called Mill Road, which is in the south, Papakura down to Drury. Drury is an enormously booming area, houses as far as you can see in every direction at the moment. There is work being done on the rail line. It's being electrified through there, and there are three new stations going in. But there needs to be a lot more attention to public transport. And one of the casualties of the lack of funding from the regional fuel tax is that while the railway line will be better, Auckland Transport had plans to bring in bus feeder services from that whole area to bring people to the train stations. It may not be able to afford to do that now.
Auckland Transport was relying on income from the regional fuel tax, which added 11.5 cents a litre at the pump, and National promised to remove. It goes in July.
It's a great day because I'm here with the Minister of Transport, Simeon Brown, and we're announcing that Auckland's regional fuel tax will end on the 30th of June.
Auckland's mayor says major transport projects in the country's biggest city are now at a crossroads, with the government confirming it'll scrap the regional fuel tax.
Aucklanders might soon be saving more money at the petrol pump, but some residents are wondering at what cost.
The cost is a shortfall in funding of over $1 billion. Simon says it will destroy the goal of a solid, reliable public transport network.
At the moment, Auckland Transport is looking at the impact of losing the regional fuel tax, and they have decided what they want to do is they're going to go back through all their spending and say, OK, we're only going to have this much money now, so what are we going to lose? So they're not simply cutting the projects that were funded by the regional fuel tax. They're saying, OK, some of those we want to keep anyway because they're too important. And that's a really tough process. They have not yet reported in public what they want to do. We expect that to come either this month or next month.
So what else is not in the transport GPS?
there is very little commitment in the GPS to doing anything serious about carbon emissions. It's gone out of the priorities altogether, and that's a worry. There is very little recognition that you can't solve congestion by building roads of national significance. You can only solve it if you create fewer reasons for people to take the car.
What's the most pressing need, do you think, for Auckland when it comes to transport?
In my view, the most pressing need in Auckland is to develop a really attractive public transport network. And that means that it should be low cost, it should be reliable, it should be frequent, it needs to be safe. And there is a real issue for public transport. Lots of people say, okay, I don't mind catching the train, but I don't want to walk in the dark from the train station to my home. So there's an issue there that needs to be solved socially. How does the rest of the city put in enough proper street lighting? Yeah, because there's not enough. How do we make it possible for people to feel safer walking around in the city, particularly at night?
For full disclosure, you're quite an avid cyclist.
Yes, I am.
Correct?
Yes.
Could it be that this government is just going in a direction that you're not keen on?
I'm not aware of any proposal that will manage congestion well on Auckland roads or any other roads that doesn't involve creating really viable alternatives to driving on them. And that's a combination of the alternative transport systems you've set up, public transport especially, but also if you have a denser city, then the chances of living closer to where you work increase, the chances of living close enough to your school for the kids to walk to school, that increases, and so on. I'm not aware that there's an alternative to solving the problem of congestion on the roads than that. I know that with the rise of EVs, we're going to have fewer emissions on our roads, but that's not necessarily the panacea that people hope for a number of reasons. EVs aren't perfect. Most of the EVs coming into New Zealand are large and they're heavy. And the other thing about EVs is that they encourage a lot of people to drive because people think, I'm not creating carbon emissions, so I can drive. And that just increases congestion again.
Consultation of the draft GPS for land transport has now closed, and the Ministry of Transport is currently reviewing the feedback. The final copy will take effect by July this year. That's all for today. The Detail is funded by RNZ and New Zealand On Air. This episode was engineered by William Saunders and produced by Alexia Russell. Thanks to Thomas Coughlin and Simon Wilson. I'm Davina Zimmer. Ka kite anō.